Hey guys, this is Rocky. Thanks for listening to the Yo Rocco podcast. I'm talking today with John Vest, who is the associate pastor at Fourth Presbyterian Church in Chicago. At the minute he's about to transition into something else, and we get into that a little bit. The thing I was mostly interested in talking to John about today is the Progressive Youth Ministry Conference, which is an event that he, in partnership with the JOPA group, is putting on next week in Chicago, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, March 19th through the 21st. It's their second conference, and we had a great conversation about some of the things that he hopes will happen and some of the things that make it progressive and some of the things he's learned in planning it. So thanks for listening. Here's John Vest. Thanks for coming on. You have a lot going on right now. So I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about some things that you're working on. So what are you working on?
What am I working on? Where should I start? I think this is supposed to be about Progressive Youth Ministry, which is coming up next week. And it kind of has snuck up here, but I'm super pumped about year two of the Progressive Youth Ministry Conference, and I've been trying to finalize all of that and get ready to host what I think is going to be a sellout crowd. So there'll be, all told, over 300 people here for that, and I'm really excited about part two and looking forward to seeing where it goes in the future.
Part two. Well, let's talk about the future real quick. You shared this publicly a few weeks ago, so I'm not letting anything out of the bag that's not supposed to be, I don't think. Stop me if I am, but you're transitioning out of your present call as the associate at Fourth after 9 years to take a post as an evangelism professor at Union Seminary in Virginia.
Right.
So is part two the last part for you?
No, I don't think so. The plan is to continue it on. The question is where to do it and how to make that as well as it has here at Fourth. One of the great things about being here at Fourth is we just built a brand new building 2 years ago, and I always sort of had as a personal and professional goal to utilize that building for some conferences once it was in place, and it's been a great way to do that. And so when I'm here at this location, we'll have to figure out a new venue or series of venues. I think we had already anticipated that it would outgrow the space that we use here at Fourth, which is not the big sanctuary, but our new chapel, Buchanan Chapel.
Oh, I see.
Which only has, about a 280, 300 person maximum capacity anyway. So I think the plan all along was we were going to have to expand to somewhere else. And now, especially that I won't be here, that's going to be part of the next phase.
You said a second ago that you hope that it'll be a sellout. I'm excited to be there. I signed up really early on this year. I was disappointed I couldn't go to the one that you did last year, the first one. So what else can you say about how things are shaping up for next week?
Yeah, I mean, when I say I hope it'll be a sellout, we were just within a few tickets of selling out last I heard. So it very well may be that we are at a sold-out spot right now, which is great. Next week's going to be, I think, similar to what we did last year, in the sense of we have an incredible lineup of plenary speakers that will talk on our three main themes. Then we will also have a great series of workshops or seminars will allow folks to get into some more detailed work around some particular topics. We'll do what we did last year, which is have some open source time where people can gather around tables around topics of their own choosing, which was, to me, one of the most exciting things last year, was seeing folks that they came with or discovered particular passions that they wanted to talk with like-minded or differently-minded folks about, and found a space to do that. So we'll do that again. I'm trying to decide if I'm going to rock out some barbecue for one of the meals.
Yes, did last year. Yes, you are.
Okay, well, there. The decision has been made.
You heard it here first, live on the podcast.
That's right. Rocky wills it, so it will be done. We'll have Trip Fuller in his homebrewed Christianity podcast again. That was an incredible time. We don't have a lot of keggers at our church. that's been the first one, and this may be the last one.
Depending on how it goes.
Given the fact that I'm not going to be here, I'm not sure who else is willing to do such things. But
you're the beer drinker on the fourth staff?
I wouldn't say I'm the only beer drinker. I may be the only one that's putting on a party quite like that.
You will be sorely missed.
Yeah, I think that may be the case. But yeah, and in fact, Tripp is doing an extra bonus thing for us this year. He's doing a pregame theology nerd boot camp, not here at Forth, but over at LaSalle Street Church down the street a little bit, which will be a really cool day-long workshop, kind of a pre-conference on Wednesday that I know a lot of folks have signed up for, and that looks like it'll be just a really good opportunity to hang out with Tripp and do some kind of foundational progressive theology work really have a good time with him.
How did you get connected to Tripp?
I've met him and hung out with him at Wild Goose Festival, at the Subverting the Norm 2 conference two years ago, I guess, and just through Tony Jones, who has worked with me on progressive youth ministry from the beginning, has done a lot of events with Tripp. Tripp seems to come out to a lot of the JOPA events to do a live podcast. Yeah, I love hanging out with Tripp. We had a really good time at Wild Goose Festival last summer, where I did, in fact, cook some barbecue. Wasn't for just an incredible deluge of rain that sort of dampened the event, but we still ate a ton of barbecue, drank a ton of beer, and talked theology. So it was fun.
What is that event like, really? I mean, I've heard a lot about Wild Goose, you know, before it was a thing, even in the States, but when it was just over in England, and people would talk longingly about it. Was this your first time going to it last summer?
It was my second time. The first time was two summers ago, and I had been wanting to go, same as you. I had heard a lot about it, and yeah, the UK version is called Greenbelt, and had heard a lot about that, and this is sort of a, I don't know if it's a direct offshoot of that, but it's certainly in the same spirit, and had wanted to go, and two summers ago went, and both times I brought my family. The first time we had a seven-month-old baby that was, you know, trying to get into everything, and the weather was really hot and or raining nonstop. And so between camping with small children and,
oh, man.
And you know, and fighting the weather, it wasn't the greatest experience. I loved the content, but I was wiped out by the end. But took a, you know, wanted to go again last year, and with our kids being a little older, and we sort of landed a really primo campsite. We had a great time, and just love all the content there, the speakers, the music, everything is just really good. And it's this fun collection of progressive-minded Christians that are talking about a wide variety of issues, whether it's theology or justice or worship. There's some talk about youth ministry. There's all sorts of things happening. And it's just kind of a cool vibe to be there with a lot of people that are doing a lot of really amazing things. And it's kind of one of those trying to drink through a fire hose sort of experiences where there's way more than any person could ever do, so you do as much as you can and soak in as much as you can. And I always seem to walk away inspired in some way.
So. Yeah, and I would expect that a big part of what you're trying to do with the Progressive Youth Ministry Conference is a piece of what happens at Wild Goose.
Yeah, one of the brilliant things about Wild Goose is it's it's a unique gathering space for a particular tribe of Christianity, though it's not in any sense closed off, and it's a pretty big tent. And I think part of what prompted me to want to go down the path that ultimately led to Progressive Youth Ministry is a sense that there wasn't anything exactly like this out in the youth ministry world before. That every time I went to a youth ministry conference or training or whatever, I always sort of had to filter everything that I heard through my own theological lens, which I guess it happens no matter what you do, but it just seemed like there was more work that needed to be done like that at these conferences. I mean, there's good stuff at most youth conferences. I'm not trying to put those down.
No, of course not.
They serve a lot of really good purposes, but it was clear to me that most of them came out of a more conservative and more evangelical perspective, and that if we could have a space for speakers and presenters to not have to sort of sidestep questions or perspectives and just sort of address things the way that we always do, that there would be something unique about that. And then the other piece that really both inspired me and confirmed once we were down that road about how needed something like this is that I recognize that I've been really fortunate to be able to do youth ministry at Forth and really in my previous church in a context where there wasn't any problem doing progressive youth ministry, that the sessions and heads of staff and other colleagues have all been very supportive and are on the same page with me in terms of what I'm doing. And I discovered it again at that Subverting the Norm conference that Phil Snyder does. I was at the second one, and I gave a workshop in youth ministry. And so that youth ministry session had a handful of people that were there, both presenters and folks in the audience, gave voice to their reality that they are not in that kind of privileged position or that I am, that they are trying to do progressive youth ministry in contexts where the church isn't quite there, or their senior pastor isn't quite there. Right. Many of them have had, you know, multiple experiences of being fired for pushing the envelope further than their communities were willing to go. And so I really wanted there to be a venue and a space, a safe space, for folks who will identify in that way to come and be with each other and you know, have some mutual support.
Let's talk about the terminology real quick. I mean, that term progressive, you've embraced that wholeheartedly and have not, you know, a lot of times you'll hear people use other designations for progressive that maybe are trying to shy away from all of the baggage that comes with that term, but you haven't done that. So what if you had to say there are two or three like central tenets or pillars of what's progressive about youth ministry as you're trying to practice it, what are they?
We were very intentional about that being the title, and we knew it would turn some people off, and that some people wouldn't come to a conference called Progressive Youth Ministry, or they knew their communities wouldn't let them go, or some speakers simply wouldn't come to a conference like this. I think what I understand it to mean, on the one hand, I mean, it does fit within the liberal stream of theology. And so this year, one of our speakers is Doug Ottotti, who is, you know, doing systematic theology from an unashamedly liberal perspective.
Okay.
That's part of what we're doing. So that's definitely part of it. But I think in a broader sense, what we mean by progressive is the kind of movement within the church that is always about moving forward. That this isn't just about kind of replicating the DNA of previous generations, but this is about living into the new expressions of Christian faith and practice that God's giving birth to in the world. And in my opinion, youth ministry is very much at the forefront of that, because we are most directly working with those emerging generations. It's partly just, you know, it is a theological label that sometimes is helpful and sometimes is not. But I think it also describes an attitude, because there are plenty of people that I would say maintain a liberal theology or work in liberal churches that I wouldn't necessarily describe as progressive.
Right, yeah.
Trying to embrace both those things.
One of the things that interests me about what you just said about trying to influence the larger culture is that a lot of in evangelical church culture especially, a lot of the things that become sort of the mainstream practice of evangelical churches started 10 years earlier as youth ministry initiatives, or a lot of the people. When you look, I don't know, 10, 15 years down the road, are you hoping that some of the progressive youth ministry stuff that you're doing now will, or some of the leaders will be in those larger church areas of influence or become more adopted by the larger liberal church, as you described it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think this is sort of part of that same pedigree and stream, that what's happening in conversations like this is what's going to be driving the future of the church. And again, for me, it's not necessarily even the people that are attending this conference, but the people that they're working with that are really going to be shaping the church that's coming to be.
Okay.
So we don't have youth at this conference.
Right. Right.
So this is a conference for youth workers who are, you know, already, you know, in their some of them, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond. So I do think that the ministries that were the people that come to this conference, the ministries that they're nurturing back in their home contexts, are very much going to be the places where whatever comes to be and that the more that can be influenced by an openness to inclusion in the broadest sense, and an openness to new ways of conceiving of the divine, and new innovative practices in terms of how to communicate that message and to live that out in the world as part of, you know, the emergence of God's kingdom, all that's leading towards whatever is on the horizon for Christianity in the world.
And is that more just sort of doing the same things that youth ministry has always done, but in a different way, in a progressive kind of way? Or is it more of doing entirely new kinds of things with youth?
It's a little bit of both, I'd say. So part of it is, and I would say, one of the hallmarks of progressive Christianity and how we have experienced that in our conference is that it is about radical inclusivity. So the ways that has filtered into the youth ministry world is changing, I think, the DNA of youth ministry in some really helpful ways. So last year, one of our main themes was sexuality. One of the things I was proudest about last year, and actually we're going to continue it, even though it's not one of our main themes this year, but we'll continue it in some workshop spaces, is to address in a very direct way transgender issues, which my sense has been that anyone that calls themselves progressive is going to be open to LGBTQ issues and inclusion. My sense has been all along that folks are fairly comfortable with the L and the G and probably the B, but the T mystifies them.
Yeah.
They're not real sure how to deal with that. And so last year, one of our plenary speakers is a transgender theologian and professor. And this year we'll have some workshops that deal with understanding gender from a variety of perspectives, but then also directly how to support gender nonconforming children and youth in faith communities, which I think that while most of the youth pastors and youth workers that will attend this conference in theory are totally open to that, my hunch is that not many of them have had to deal with it just yet.
Right.
Again, they may not be in a kind of community where there is as widespread openness to that as they may have. So,
which is why they haven't dealt with it yet.
Right, exactly. But the reality is, I think that's going to become more and more mainstream or normal for there to be, you know, at least one family with a transgender or gender non-conforming child.
Right.
And if workers and pastors don't know how to address that and don't have any resources, it could not be it could go not so well.
Well,
so,
and there's a whole it seems to me like there's a whole like complex of things that you would need to be able to take into account that if you've never dealt with it before, you just are kind of in the dark in terms of how to talk about it with the youth themselves, how to make them feel welcome and included, but also how to talk with their family, how to talk to the other students, how to talk to the rest of the congregation about it. Most of us just have never done that. The workshop will get into that stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that's great.
In fact, the workshop will have at least one parent from my congregation who has been working through that with her family, and we're, you know, in these last weeks before we get there, adding other parents and religious leaders, not all of whom are Christian, that will be able to talk about what that experience is like, and also be able to say, you know, here's what I wish had happened, or here's what I would like to see.
Interesting. And it's not a space to sort of debate it as an issue. I mean, you're staking out a spot and saying radical inclusivity is part of the future. That's what's progressive about what we're doing, and it's not a debatable thing. We're talking about how to do that well.
Right, and that was the thing that was great about the conference last year, that was so apparent, that, you know, we didn't have to begin with any disclaimers. We didn't have to go through any of those debates. We just started from day one. This is who we are, and let's talk about youth ministry and the people that we're called to love and serve and the people we know God loves. And, we didn't have to spend a whole lot of time kind of working through any of that, because I think... Because of the name of the conference and the people we had as presenters, it was clear as day where we stood.
So I appreciate the very specific description of the workshop on LGBT issues. Can you give me another example or two of what a progressive youth ministry workshop will look like?
There are several workshops this year that do deal with race issues and how, you know, in the kind of post-Ferguson world, we talk about race with youth, and especially there's one that is about how to do youth ministry with a predominantly white youth group where Black Lives Matter, and how to do that, which I think it's probably, even though race is one of our themes, one of the things I'm anxious to see, in terms of who shows up for this. Last year, it was a relatively still a white group, and that tends to be the case at a lot of these conferences.
Yeah, of course.
Trying to expand out with who we invite as speakers, clearly, but hope that this will also bring in a variety of different participants so that it really is a good, diverse group. There are some conferences, or some workshops, rather, on confirmation, which seems to be, and as I think you know, I have done a lot of stuff with this myself.
Yeah.
I think confirmation in terms of a practice, since a lot of the folks that are a part of this progressive youth ministry movement come out of a mainline context where it is sort of a cornerstone of those youth ministries. I think that for a while we're going to continue to wrestle in a variety of ways with how to do confirmation well and how to transition that into whatever comes after confirmation.
Yeah.
So that's important. There'll be some other workshops on sexuality and how to teach sexuality in holistic ways, and how to talk about sexuality in holistic ways, again, from a, you know, from a progressive perspective.
What do you mean by holistic when you talk about teaching sexuality?
One of our workshoppers, Amy Johnson, is involved in the Our Whole Lives sexuality curriculum, which I have always described as holistic, in the sense that it really tries to approach approach sexuality, you know, both from kind of nuts and bolts, sort of here's what happens, to, you know, here's how we think about sexuality, you know, as not just a physical but also a spiritual and emotional and everything else. So I think that's part of that.
Okay.
And so that would be a good one.
Well, let me. I want to. Can I shift gears real quick? I'm really curious. I'm really curious in what got you to actually do this. You talked about the experience at the Wild Goose Festival, and I know from reading your blog for several years that you had thought about an event like this for a long time before you actually did it. So what was the thing that actually, you know, tripped it for you to where you actually decided, like, okay, now is the time to do this?
Well, I had in general the experience of being at other conferences that came from a different theological, ecclesiological perspective that were I was getting tired of making all the translations. There was a conference that was put on that I thought was going to move the needle a little bit in the direction that I had in mind. I still didn't feel like it quite got there, and I think that was probably the thing that really spurred me on, was that, you know, if rather than just going to conferences and complaining about it and sort of sitting in the back on Twitter saying this isn't as good as it could be.
Who does that?
Yeah, I know, exactly. That I should just put my money where my mouth is and say, look, if I got a vision for this, let's do it. And so when you know, the space here at Forth became available, I called up Tony Jones, who I knew could be a great help in putting, you know, getting the logistics together as part of what they do with the JOPA group, but also, you know, more than a decade ago, I think maybe it's 13 or 14 years ago now, Tony wrote a book, I think it was his first book, called Postmodern Youth Ministry.
I have that book.
Yeah, which I have kind of a love-hate relationship with. If you're more familiar with some of Tony's trajectory, I mean, he's evolved quite a bit since he wrote that first book, which, you know, is published by Zondervan. So it's, you know, it wasn't going to be like way out.
Yeah, that was a youth specialties publication, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So there was a lot of commingling of youth specialties and Zondervan and like the initial emerging village folks, you know, back then in the early 2000s. So yeah, so I wanted Tony to be a part of that, and he did a great job last year, sort of passing on the torch. You know, his talk was basically, this is my last talk. You guys need to start doing this yourselves, right? Your own books, do your own thing, and that's exactly what, you know, what this is really all about.
Why did you do this? How come nobody else did this first?
I don't know. I think it's easy to talk yourself out of something like this because it seems too big or too complicated or it'll take too much time. And all those things are true. But if you have, I think, kind of an entrepreneurial spirit, and maybe especially if you're a big picture kind of person, that it seems like something that is definitely doable. And honestly, I think we're at the point now of do-it-yourself mentality that anybody could do this, right? Anyone that has any kind of space where you can gather people, you can start a website and invite people to come to your thing and sell tickets through, you know, Eventbrite or whatever. It's so accessible now. You don't have to be a big production company in order to put on something like this. So I hope that there are more and more gatherings like this. Now, it does, you know, it does take money to fly people around the country and gather people in a particular space. You have to have an idea that people are actually interested in order for that to take off. And I just, you know, I felt confident in the idea. And the more and more I talked with folks, and, you know, I tested the waters. I put it out there
right
on my blog and in other people's blogs, you know, would folks come to this, and there was a great response. So I thought, let's just do it. And the first thing I said last year when we started the thing, I was like, it's great to throw a party and people actually show up.
And you'd never done an event like this before. It's not like you've got a big background in like conference planning, is it?
Right. No, not at all. And again, that's why I contacted Tony and Doug Padgett.
Because they do.
I knew that they had, and so it was great to work with them, and still is great to work with them to work on some of those logistics. But it, you know, my new gig at Union Presbyterian Seminary. Part of what I'm going to be expected to do is do at least one evangelism conference out on the East Coast, and so I feel fortunate that I've gone through this experience of doing this twice now, that I feel like, you know, I'll have a pretty good handle on what needs to be done and how to do it and how to do it well.
And that seems to me to be a really strong point in favor of just trying something like this, because you never know where you're going to be someday in the future where you might draw upon what you learn from trying something like this.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I think that's right.
Are there two or three things that you can say from doing this, you know, once, almost twice now, here's what absolutely works to make something like this go well?
You know, it helps if you're this person or if you're not this person to find that person that can handle logistics on the ground really well. There are a lot of moving parts, especially once it gets going. I mean, there's lots of moving parts stage, but when the event starts and there are multiple things happening in different spaces, to have someone on the ground that can really manage that, I think, is really, really key.
And that's how JOPA functions for this event.
Yes, actually, I've really benefited from having colleagues here at Forth that are really able to help with that in terms of the here. So JOPA has really helped in the planning and the lead up and the marketing and selling tickets and all that. And in envisioning the process with me, but the folks that make it happen on the ground here really are volunteers and staff people that I work with here at this church. So to have a good, and this is what Tony has told me several times in the last couple years, is what a difference it makes to have a host location and organization that really is behind the idea and is able to make the things on the ground happen that need to happen. So, you know, if someone had just approached me and said, hey, could we host this conference here, which actually does happen a lot, you know, I may or may not have the time or the motivation on my end to be able to pour a lot of time and energy into that.
Right, because it takes a ton.
It does, but the fact that, you know, this is my baby, I've been highly motivated to make this work, and so that I think you know, being able to take the time out of your schedule, and it's like anything, you know, if you're passionate about something, you will make time for it, and find the time for it. But to be, you know, to be able to manage all those moving parts is really critical.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see how it to see what actually happens at this thing. I've never been part of an event like this. I've been doing youth ministry for about 7 years now, and you know, I'm in a similar position to you where I have the freedom to do, you know, the progressive stuff without ruffling a lot of feathers. But still, to be at a gathering that's solely people who want to be doing youth ministry in that way is I'm excited.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you before we go about some of the stuff that you have written on your blog in the last, I don't know, month, 6 weeks. And I'm asking you about it because you've written about it, and it's public about Tony, because he's a central part of the planning of this event. You know, and some of the stuff that's, you know, going on with an online conversation around Tony. Do you expect that to have any effect on participation at the event or on the tenor of the event at all?
No, I don't. I don't think that it will. Back in January, Jopa had hosted and put on Christianity 21, mm-hmm. and this stuff started to flare up around that time. And other than honestly, other than folks trying to hijack Twitter hashtags, there's no real scuffle around it. We haven't had anyone back out of speaking. We haven't had anyone, to my knowledge, say they're not going to come or demand a refund. So no, I don't think that it's going to be an issue at all for the conference.
Okay. Well, you seem to take it on pretty directly and pretty personally when it first when the hashtag hijacking started to happen. I think it might have been surprising to some people how direct and how personal you were as quickly as you were. Why did you decide to take that approach?
I did what I did partly because I knew that 2 months down the road, this was back in January, that I would be hosting a conference with the same people that were being attacked online, or the allegations were being made about. And I wanted it to be clear from the beginning that that I didn't think that was going to impact Progressive Youth Ministry, and that I wasn't changing my plans, and that this conference was going to happen the way that it had been planned to happen. And so I guess I was trying to be preemptive or proactive and saying, look, this is not going to affect PYM, and we're going to continue to have a great conference in March.
And did that have the effect that you hoped it would?
Well, I mean, yes and no. Honestly, I think the shows of support for Tony around that issue continue to create more drama and controversy. And so, I mean, subsequently, I changed the way that I was going to talk about that publicly, made a decision to really be more about the conference and the conference's happening without much more elaborate comment on the particulars of the issue, and certainly not trying to weigh in on what, not trying to make guidance about what I came to consider just a really inappropriate online discourse about personal matters that wasn't helping anybody by talking about it in the way that it was and in some respects continues to be talked about online. And I've tried to disengage from that piece of it.
Yeah, it seems like one of those things that you don't anticipate having to address or deal with when you try to put on an event like this. But part of doing this kind of work publicly, I mean, it's public work. You're putting on an event, you're partnering with people who are doing their own work, and you're inviting people to come to it. And part of that is that you can't really predict what's going to happen and how people are going to react to any number of variables. And if it's your thing, like you said earlier, if it's your baby, you kind of have to be the person who addresses that stuff.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a learning experience for me. Anyone that works in ministry or works in a church is, by definition, a public persona, a public person that stands in front of, even if it's 10 people or 1,000 people on Sundays and does their thing. You're in the public space. Once you start expanding your platform, whether it's through blogging or podcasting, once you host a national conference that draws people from all around the country, you become a public figure in a slightly different way. And that has pluses and negatives, as I've certainly discovered in the last several months. And that's part of it. But again, I think part of there's some value to be had in if you want to do it in seizing that kind of platform if it's for a cause that you believe in. And I, you know, I do believe in the PYM concept and idea and space. And, you know, for me, you know, this mother of a gender non-conforming young person at our church, who's just so happy that we're having this conversation, you know, said, you know, this is going to save lives, right? If you
wow. can
spaces where people can have these kind of conversations, that's really important. And so for me, that's why I wanted to do stuff. And you know, I think anytime you start expanding that platform, you learn sometimes in some hard ways what goes along with that.
Yeah, and like it or not, when you invite people to an event like this, it's your event. I mean, you're identified with it, and people are going to address you with their concerns and the things about it they don't agree with, right?
Right, right. Yeah. And I would say that, I mean, that, you know, this has been a really eye-opening experience for me in terms of part of, I think, a lot of where I feel called as a pastor you know, as a thinker about the church is for the people that have been, for whatever reason, turned off or burned by institutional church. And one of the things that I've certainly discovered is that, I mean, there's even more pain and suffering and woundedness out there than I even, I guess, thought. And that translates to a lot of very passionate interchanges online. And that's been, it's been good for, even for all the difficulties of it, it's been good to get a window into that and to understand that better. And I think the more understanding around the church world there is about where we are and where we're not, the better we'll be as the body of Christ.
Well, one of the things I really appreciate about you and what you do is that you're very open about what you're learning. You know, I think even the change in course from the first time you address the situation to the second shows that, you know, unlike a lot of what we consider as like necessary leadership skills of putting up a united front and not showing that you're wavering or changing your mind, you sort of decided to acknowledge that, okay, here's what I would do differently now. And you were very open and public about that. You weren't just talking about it with the people who were planning the event with you. You wrote that on a blog post. And I think that's a valuable thing for me as somebody who's trying to do similar kinds of work to see and say, you know what, this is what leadership needs to look like now. Maybe this is progressive leadership.
Yeah, well, you know what, and it's exactly not the kind of leadership that's modeled in the rest of the world. I mean, just yesterday, you know, I was doing officer training here at the church, and we were using Landon Witsit's Theo Academy stuff.
I used that yesterday too with my confirmation class.
Yeah, I saw. And it was the session on leadership. You know, one of the things that I was trying to discuss with the officers was, because someone had mentioned transparency and vulnerability as things that we value, and I asked just point blank, said, you know, my assumption is that those aren't as valued in the corporate world or the business world or whatever other sort of arenas you're at, and yeah, people agreed that that's right, that, you know, leaders in different contexts are not encouraged, and certainly there's no incentive to be honest and forthright about mistakes or changes, and so I think that's one place where the church, when we demonstrate leadership, has a totally different way of going about it.
Yeah, and transparency has been a value in sort of, you know, leadership conversations for a long time. But there's a big difference between personal transparency and, say, organizational transparency. People will talk about wanting transparency, like they talk about wanting accountability. That is, they want to be able to see what's going on in the organization. But transparency as a personal value for a leader is being willing to say, here's what's important to me about this, and here's where I think I messed up, or here's what I would do differently. That's very different from saying, well, we're going to be transparent as an organization, so you're going to see all the nuts and bolts.
Right. When you live your life as a leader, and when you think out loud on a blog or on social media, it's interesting to see how that plays out. And, you know, some people are open to that. Some people get freaked out by that. And I've seen people just, you know, in recent months, and again, this is where I feel blessed. For whatever reason, my community, for the most part, doesn't seem to mind that I air my opinions and talk about kind of where I'm at about things, whether it's on my blog or on Facebook posts or whatever. And that seems to be valued. I know full well that there are pastors for whom that's not the case, and it's again one of those things that I've been really fortunate with, and that I wish that more folks would have that same kind of experience, because I think it's a new way of exercising pastoral leadership that just didn't exist prior to these technologies. And I think it's really a vital way that we are pastors today.
Yeah, and there are better and worse ways to do it, but still, I think the fundamental part of it that's different is that you can be public. It's almost, right. I'm wondering if it's not just better to default to sort of the public setting when it comes to talking about where you're at on a given issue or a given question. I kind of use my blog this way. I was talking to Marcy Glass a few weeks ago on the podcast about this, and her congregation has been really supportive of her work in legislative advocacy around LGBTQ issues in Idaho. And she said that's really enabled her to do that work, which is really personally important for her, and enabled her to do it in a really public way. Right. Whereas I have other friends who are in ministry who really, really are motivated and passionate about some of these issues, but have to play it a little bit closer to the chest because they're anxious about the climate in their congregation. And it seems to me that climate makes a huge difference. Maybe part of progressive youth ministry needs to be changing the climate in the congregation to make to enable this work more fully. And maybe that's already part of the conversation. I don't know.
Yeah, I think implicitly it is. I think probably it would be helpful to address that in a more explicit way.
Yeah, the thing that has really talk, go ahead.
That's a good talk from Rocky for PYM3 is for you to do that.
Yeah, well, I could talk about it in terms of this ought to be the case. I enjoy that where I am, but I didn't create it. I think the people who came before me created that climate in the congregation that I've benefited from. So Brené Brown, for example, Brené Brown's stuff on vulnerability and leadership has, you would think from all the different people who are in ministry who have embraced that and shared that talk on Facebook and quote that book at conferences, you would think she was writing for a church audience, given how many people in the church, myself included, have really embraced that. Kind of this central idea that your vulnerability as a person and as a leader is not a liability. It's one of the biggest strengths that you have. And there's something deeply resonant with the gospel about that for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really appreciate you taking the time the week out from this event. I know you have a lot to do, and I've enjoyed hearing you talk about what's going to happen and kind of what you've learned. And it's really one of the more interesting things about this event for me to understand you and how it is that you came to put this on and what your hopes and dreams are for it now and then in this next chapter of whatever you're going to do. So I appreciate you being willing to talk about that, and I'm really looking forward to it.
It should be a really exciting week, and I'm looking forward to it as well.
All right, great. Thanks a lot, John. Enjoy the rest of your week, and I'll see you on Monday.
All right, thanks. And hey, congratulations on this podcast. This is great. I'm glad you did this.
Hey, I appreciate it. We're just seeing where it goes. I'm having fun with it, though. I'm glad you're listening, and I appreciate you coming on today.
Yep, happy to do it, buddy.
All right, see you, John.